Welcome to Dark Mode, the podcast that brings you sage advice from two technology experts. But that's not just what we call ourselves. It's what our moms tell people when they insist that their sons do, in fact, still have a podcast. I'm your host, Luke Miani.
And I'm your host, Noah Rubin. On this show, we take questions from listeners, attempt to answer them to varying degrees of success, and maybe even have a laugh or two along the way.
And today, we're going to start with an apology or two along the way because, well, we've been off for like 6 weeks. There's a reason behind it, though, okay? Because if you think about it, we were here with you last before Thanksgiving. Quite a bit before it. What did you say? It was November 10th?
I think it was November 10th, yeah.
Good Lord. Okay, so that's a bit tough. That's a month and a half. But look, a lot of the stars aligned and not in a good way. We had Thanksgiving, then Noah was traveling, and then I moved to a different apartment, and then I didn't get internet at said new place until literally yesterday, so I had no way of doing it. Noah came to visit. We tried to find the time to do it, but we were so busy with no internet, we would have had to, like, I don't even know how we would have filmed it, to be perfectly honest with you.
Yeah, that was kind of a mess. I mean, I was there for like a week, but like literally you were still moving in. Sam was moving. We were literally like moving stuff in, and yeah, you didn't have any internet. So it was a little bit tough to do the show, but now at least you're set up enough to do it. So we can get one last episode in for the year.
Yeah, that's true. Literally at the final hour, it's like 11:58 on the year, and we're like, hey, here we are. We didn't forget about this. We're still alive. Yep. But I'll tell you what. Yep. I'll tell you what. We are, I think, in for a pretty good year next year. At least I hope. Because, I mean, it in terms of leaks and rumors, we haven't heard a ton of stuff that's imminent since we've been gone. Since we've been gone, there haven't been many Apple leaks at all. That's a...
Ooh, you should do a full version of that.
I agree. It's going to be out on Spotify, guys. Make sure to follow me. I put my Cash App down there, too, if you want to support upcoming artists like myself. And, you know, other upcoming artists like Apple, who they're working on a couple... I mean, super niche company. I don't know if you've heard of it. They're working on a couple of things. One that we've heard of recently is a home hub that's like this wall-mounted home-based thing. Not sure what that's going to be about, but doesn't that sound interesting?
Yeah, I think I might have vaguely heard about that. I feel like, I mean, it seems like the iPad would be the thing to do that, but I could see there being a dedicated, because I guess you need to have like, use like an Apple TV or something as your home hub, right? And that enables all of your stuff to like connect to the internet. So maybe if there's like a dedicated tablet, it seems weird that Apple would make another tablet other than the iPad, but I guess I could see it.
I'll tell you what though, the thing that makes it kind of make a little bit of sense to me is when you think about using it for blinds and lights, because I could see a value in having, like, I mean, we have smart thermostats, right, where you go up and you, like, adjust stuff. What if you had, instead of a thermostat, you had this Apple Home Hub, and it could control the different temperature zones in your house and the lighting in the different rooms? I personally, it's kind of a dumb way to say it, but I don't like going into like an app on my phone and, you know, doing my rooms that way. I think, I don't know, there's something wrong about it. I set everything to one room and just do everything all together because I hate, you know, oh, I'm going into my kitchen now. Let me pull out my phone, turn on the kitchen. Oh, let me go to the living room. Let me pull out my phone again, turn on the living room. But if you had like a central hub, or even a couple, I don't know, and you could set your different like scenes and lighting zones, I could see that maybe being useful, but it can't be expensive. It can't be more than like $200.
Yeah, I feel like once it starts getting, like, let me put it this way. If you, let's say you got an old iPad, you could even get an M1, an M1 iPad Pro, or, you know, some old iPad Air or whatever, relatively, you know, last couple of years. And I feel like if you had that and you're like, this is going to be my dedicated, you know, home device, and you left it in your home, and the whole point was to use, you know, I guess the home app or whatever app you're going to use, and you could even just leave that app running 24/7. You just walk up and do it. I could see that being one approach. So I guess if Apple's going to build a dedicated device, it has to be at least price competitive with buying an old iPad. And theoretically, it should be able to do more. So maybe it's wall mounted. That would be kind of cool. And you walk up, maybe there's a motion sensor and it sees, oh, you walked up, I'm going to turn the screen on, and it gives you easy access. It still seems a little bit weird to me because I feel like the whole thing with like Apple, because like, remember, this is Apple. So even though, you know, you have a bunch of different apps and stuff, Apple's dream, the sort of world that Apple lives in, is HomeKit, and everything uses HomeKit, and you use the Home app for everything. So I kind of feel like they would want to push that, like, all your stuff is in the Home app, and whatever device you happen to have on you, you just open the Home app and you do it. So a dedicated device seems a little bit weird to me from like Apple's perspective, but from the user perspective, I guess I could see it.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought of it that way. I don't know. I feel like we're hearing more and more rumors from Apple of products like this that make me confused. You know, I think in historically when we've heard Apple rumors, you're kind of like, oh, cool. But now I feel like, I don't know, maybe it's because they're feeling a little bit stagnant lately. And I get the sense that they're like maybe trying to throw more at the wall to see what will stick. That's kind of the vibe that I'm getting lately, which is interesting. I don't know that it's necessarily good or bad, but I do think that Apple needs to reinvest more in like more substantive updates for their like actual core devices rather than spending all of this time on, I mean, like, why are we talking about a home hub when it took them 3 years to put a chip swap in a Mac in an iPad mini? Hello?
That's definitely true. I feel like the thing that I think is like Apple has so much money. They have like ridiculous amounts of money that I'm like, why not do both? They need to invest in the core products and keep doing those updates. But I agree with you that it can get a bit stagnant. I'll be honest, the iPhone 16 series this year, especially the Pro models, were not that interesting. At least to me, and I think you agree, and I think a lot of people agree. The 15 Pro compared to the 16 Pro, even the 14 to the 15, I think was more interesting than the 15 to the 16. I think that the 16 Pro series was not very exciting this year, but it's the 16. I mean, it's the 16. The iPhone's been around for a long time, so it's, you know, we've talked about this before, that sort of happens, that it's so mature that it does get a little bit stagnant. And so on the other, you know, flip side, I think Apple throwing these things at the wall, I mean, they kind of did that with the Vision Pro, and the Vision Pro pretty much died out like immediately. There was like a lot of hype when it came out, and now I often forget that it even exists. Hopefully they'll do a second version and, you know, commit to it a bit more. But I agree, like throwing stuff at the wall, seeing what sticks, I think that's a good thing. Overall, you know, Apple can release some interesting products and gadgets and whatever, and that can be cool, but like they have enough money to do that and also do the other stuff. They can hire more people, they can get more office space if they need to, you know, whatever, but like they could do both, and I hope that they do both.
That's a great point. They really have, there's no excuse. Like how we've kind of gotten gaslit into thinking that Apple is not able to do more than they're doing. And I feel like this is not just an Apple thing, but I feel like the whole vibe of the 2020s so far has been effort optimization by companies. They're not optimizing for product. They're optimizing for what's the most amount of money with the least amount of effort that we can get away with. And I feel like you're seeing that with a lot of cars. You're seeing that with a lot of consumer products. You're seeing it with graphics cards. You're seeing it with PCs, Mac, everything. And it's kind of, you know, I guess we're here on the eve of almost New Year. It's New Year's Eve, right? We've got, we're almost in 2025. We're almost halfway through the decade. And to your point, I agree with you. The iPhone 14 to 15 was a lot better than 15 to 16. I honestly think that 13 to 14 was a bigger update than 15 to 16. And I don't have a problem necessarily with any of the products that came out from Apple this year, but it really does feel like across the board, everyone is trying to make as much money as possible with as little effort as possible. And I know that that's kind of the whole point of capitalism, but when you go back in like the 2010s, when you look at the automotive world and you look at the world of tech, I don't think that we had that same approach. Like, I watched a really interesting video. This is a bit of a tangent, but I promise this is relevant. I watched a really interesting video by Jason Kamis of Haggerty, and he talked about Ferdinand Piëch, who was the visionary that led Volkswagen Audi Group for a very, very long time, like 40 years or something like that. And basically, he had this really, really great way of making cars more premium than they actually were. So a lot of car makers and Apple, let's be honest, use what's called part sharing. You look no further than Apple Silicon. That's part sharing, baby. But what Ferdinand Piëch did with part sharing was use it to make the higher end cars nicer by also making the lower end cars nicer. And so what they would do is, you know, the Lamborghini Huracan is co-developed with the Audi R8. They're very, very, very similar cars and they share a lot of parts. And so what they did in doing that was create a Lamborghini that was as good as it could possibly be while making the parts more mass producible and therefore more affordable by putting them in a higher volume car like the Audi R8. And so what you get is, hey, that Audi R8 is kind of like a Lamborghini instead of the other way around. And lately, with him leaving Volkswagen, which was right before Dieselgate and like that whole thing, what you see nowadays feels like the opposite approach. It's let's design the bare minimum, add a couple of features to make it feel a little nicer, and then we sell it. And I think that's the wrong approach because people are getting annoyed by it. Here's a great comment. Sorry to yap for so long in a row, but people, the Chen here says, when the Lamborghini Urus is an Audi, that's a perfect example because that's when part sharing goes the wrong way, right? The Lamborghini Huracan and the R8 were co-developed to create the best car possible and then make it more affordable for the Audi version. The Lamborghini Urus is literally an Audi RS Q8 with Lamborghini bits thrown in. It has the same steering wheel that you would find in an Audi. It has all the same window switches and ignition switches and climate control. The center, the gauge cluster is exactly the same, just reskinned to say Lamborghini. You can find examples of this all over the place. Another one would be Rolls-Royce. You can plug in an OBD2 reader from Amazon in your BMW and put the Rolls-Royce emblem on your gauge cluster when it starts up because they use the same parts. But because the high-end car is using the low-end part, it feels crappy. That's what Apple's doing.
That's a really interesting, like, perspective, an interesting way to think about it, because I agree. A lot of the, like the Apple, the chip swaps and like keeping the same designs for a long time and all that, it is a lot like that. And then I feel like, so a lot of it was like that. There were some, I'm trying to just reflect on this year, because, mm-hmm. you know, it seems like it's a good time to do that. And I think a lot of people's favorite device of the year, favorite Apple launch of the year, is probably the new Mac Mini that came out recently. It seems like people really like that. And that's like, you know, that's great. They built the, you know, this new chassis, and it's a lot smaller as it should be, and, you know, more efficient, and it looks nicer, and it truly is a Mac Mini. It's actually, you know, a very small Mac. But like, even that was arguably a few years later than it could have been. Apple could have and probably should have done that a lot sooner. And then there were a lot of things, you know, you could look at like the iMac, for example, you know, slightly different colors and, you know, new chip, and maybe there were one or two other center stage or something like that. But overall, the iMac hasn't really changed since what, 2021, when they did the big refresh. So yeah. I agree. It's like, you know, we're a few years into Apple Silicon now, and some of it's starting to get a little bit old. It is, you know, a lot of old parts, you know, new chip kind of thing.
And like, the iMac is a great example, because they just completely gave up on the larger size. And I've yeah. seen a lot of people justify that by saying that people aren't buying iMacs as much, but they still made an M2 Ultra Mac Pro. And even in the Intel days, the Mac Pro was never a high volume product. And I feel like what we're seeing is this, they're kind of treating effort like a precious resource. And I just, something changed in the last, let's call it even 10 years. I'm not just talking about Apple. I'm talking about anything technologically adjacent, where it just seems like quality is going down, effort is going down, minor updates are becoming normal. I mean, even like the new Model 3. Now, Tesla maybe is a bad example of this, considering that the Model S has had the same body style for 12 years. But like, what are we doing here? The iPad, the new iPad, I like it, but they're not investing any effort into, hey, let's maybe change the software. The Model S that came out 3-4 years ago, they said, okay, change the plastic parts, the bumpers, change the interior, leave everything else the same. There you go, job done. Same thing with the new Model 3. It's better. I like the new Model 3. But they only change the front bit and the back bit that's plastic, and then, boom, new car.
Yeah, I definitely do. I'm trying to think of other examples, but I do kind of get that feeling. I agree with you. I don't know what it is. I feel like, I guess I'm just thinking, as far as Apple, like back in the earlier days of the iPhone, when you were getting like big leaps year over year, or, you know, I guess you'd have the S models and maybe that would be slightly smaller, but like every 2 years you were getting like a big, you know, we're talking like 2G to the 3G or 3GS to the 4 to the 5 to the 6, and even the S models had, you know, some things going for them. So it's like, I guess, I don't know, it was a little bit earlier, things have progressed so much, you know, technology grows very quickly, and, you know, Moore's law, which I don't know if that really applies anymore, but it used to. So mm-hmm. I feel like maybe that's part of it, that like back 10, 20 plus years ago, there was a lot, maybe it's that there was more to do. I feel like there's still more to do, but maybe back then there was, like, you look at the iPhone and you're like, okay, the iPhone, look at the iPhone 3G or 2G, and you're like, there's so much that we can do to move forward. The path is very clear. And then for the iPhone, we're kind of at the point where it's very mature. But then when the Vision Pro, when we were talking about the Vision Pro back when that was relevant, which seems like forever ago, we were talking, yeah. we're like, this is the first one, and it's so clear where they can go from there, right? That the it being very heavy and uncomfortable is a big problem. The software, there's not a ton of stuff you can do with it. On and on, there's a lot of things we can do. But I feel like the difference is that when the iPhone was in its younger days, Apple was really putting in the effort, like you were saying, they were really putting in the effort to move it forward, and we were getting these big changes, you know, pretty often. With the Vision Pro, I know it's, you know, it's been out for less than a year, so, you know, time will tell. But Apple hasn't done really anything. They haven't really said anything after it launched. There's been, I guess, a couple of software updates, I think relatively minor. Maybe some of them were kind of interesting, but there hasn't been much. And I don't think we've really heard many rumors. I heard that they're slowing down or maybe even stopping production of the Vision Pro. I heard that a while ago. But otherwise, we haven't heard too many rumors. And yeah, maybe Apple's just not putting in the effort now like they did in the past.
Yeah. No, I definitely do think that I think that's exactly it. There is a less clear path, for sure. I mean, you go back to the greatest iPhones of all time. I think most people would probably say 4, 5, 6 were pretty legendary. The 6, I don't think has aged all that well, just because I think it's ugly as sin. Maybe it'll come around once it is like a vintage thing, which it isn't currently. But when you look at when you go back and actually break down what were the main features of the iPhone 4 and the iPhone 5, the biggest ones for the 4 were the materials, right? You moved from a fully plastic back to glass and stainless steel, like just the massive visual upgrade. You had Retina display, obviously a major upgrade, and the A4 chip, the first ever Apple Silicon. That's a pretty big deal and made it a lot faster. Then you had better cameras. I think that's also when they introduced the front-facing camera. So that was a big one as well. Like, those are some pretty good, those are core features, right? That's, hey, the screen isn't blurry anymore. Hey, it doesn't feel like crap anymore. Same with the iPhone 5. It was, again, jaw-droppingly beautiful and very premium design. A taller screen, which a lot of people have been asking for. Really, really good cameras. Much faster chip. Like, these are, again, core features. And when your phone is as good as any phone is now, I kind of, to be honest, I don't know what you need to stand out. Like, the materials are already very good. They're not, it doesn't look any different, but the materials are great. I don't know.
Yeah, and I feel like, so I guess I can kind of see, like, okay, we were saying that the 16, especially the Pro series this year, were kind of boring. And I agree with you. I'm like, what do we really need from these phones? They already look great. The screens are great. They're big. They're very, very fast. Whatever. The phones I get. And I'm not sure. I mean, if anyone can figure out what to do with the iPhone, it's going to be Apple, because they have the people and the money to do it. Maybe it'll be a folding phone or some other form factor or something. I'm not sure what the iPhone will be. But I agree in general. Like, a lot of things that we've seen lately from Apple, the iMac was a good example. The AirPods Max, I hate to even think about that, but when they announced the new colors for the AirPods Max, and what was it, new colors and USB-C, but it was still the old chip, so it didn't even support all of the features that the AirPods Pro 2 support. Like, mm-hmm. You want to talk about not putting in the effort? That could have been, was that Apple's worst product of the year, the new AirPods Max? Was there something worse than that?
That's a good point. You know, I have seen people say the new Apple Watch, because it's down features because of their lawsuit, and the bezels are actually thicker, than the previous models. So that, I mean, I personally like it. I have the titanium one. Although, to be honest, I can't even tell the difference between this and the stainless steel. Okay, you know what? I might have to do my last video of the year might have to be on this topic. I think I might have to do a recap of like, why has Apple, I think someone in chat here put it really well. Apple lost their hunger. And I personally blame Tim Cook. I think that this is the result of a supply chain CEO. Because don't get me wrong, Tim Cook has really done a lot for Apple. He has made the products more reliable. He has made them much more streamlined. He's made them go together better. You know, the fact that my Apple Watch, these AirPods, and the Mac Pro that I'm using to stream this podcast are all using the same underlying silicon. That's an incredible feat of not just engineering, but supply chain management. You have to create a fully vertically integrated system of products to do something like that. And it's a tremendous achievement. But the problem is you end up with devices that feel like they were designed on a spreadsheet. That's, you know what? That's, I like that. I'm going to write that down. I feel like that is kind of the story of 2024 is all of these products, with the exception of the Mac Mini, feel like they were designed in a spreadsheet instead of a studio, you know?
It's a good point. And I feel like, I feel like the way, if you listen, I haven't listened to a ton of it, but if you listen to like Steve Jobs, I feel like the way that Steve Jobs would talk about things and the way that Tim Cook would talk about things, I do really feel like I agree that Steve Jobs was more of the, I don't know, visionary is the word, but he was, you know, thinking of these things. And I agree that like that Tim Cook is, you know, more of a, you know, supply chain guy, he's a numbers guy. I mean, there's Apple has done, you know, great things under Tim Cook, like you said. But I do agree, however much it is Tim Cook, however much it is the economy and COVID and, you know, other things that have happened, and however much it is the progression of technology and the fact that a lot of things are very mature right now. But yeah, there's just, it is different. Apple is different than it was. I think it's easy to point to the leader, and the leader definitely has something to do with it. But yeah, I mean, the idea like Apple lost their hunger, I agree. Like, yeah, the earlier iPhones and, you know, earlier things before that, it really felt like there was more, like they were excited to, and maybe, okay, here's another aspect. You know, Apple has these pre-recorded shows, which are great. The events, the keynotes are pre-recorded and they're great. And they're very professional, and you have these cool transitions, and you know they're perfect because they're not live, so there's never going to be a mistake and never going to be a joke that you know, a funny circumstance, whatever. And I feel like you kind of lose something there too, you know what I mean? Like in the older days when they had these live keynotes with the people talking, and they're talking about how, oh, we're really excited to show this to you, and they would show it, and they'd like be talking about it, and the audience would be clapping. And now, when they do, you know, Tim Cook comes out and says, "Good morning, we have so many things to show you," whatever. And he's really just reading a script, and it's like maybe they're excited, maybe they're not, but like, I don't know, they don't feel as excited about this stuff anymore. They're more just like, "All right, here's the stuff that our teams, you know, that we were able to do, and now we're just gonna show it to you, and you know, you can make up your mind."
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And the last couple of Apple events have felt, I mean, I get that they're shooting and editing and doing everything on iPhone and Mac, which is great, and it's like a good tie-in for the product. But I feel like the production value since the COVID keynotes has gone down. The enthusiasm has gone down. It kind of feels like we're watching just like here's a list of features that you now get. Okay, now here's the next person to tell you about more features. And I think that there's also like some of the stuff that they're doing with the presenters is kind of feeding into that. Because on the one hand, I like that the actual team leads are presenting their products. But on the other hand, you kind of developed this like this character relationship with some of the CEOs. Like the way that Phil Schiller or Craig Federighi could present a product or an update just had like a certain feeling to it. Part of that was because it was live. Part of it was because they were just really good at doing those things. And this is not a DEI thing. This is not a, you know, like I've seen that in my comments, which is disheartening. I've seen people being like, oh, I can't believe that they're shoving all of these different people down our throats. It's like, yeah, the people that work at the company and made the product that they're showing you. It's not about that. It's about, hey, this is not a media-trained person who we see for 5 minutes. We don't develop any sort of like recurring relationship with them. They're not interacting with an audience. They're not, you know, cracking jokes outside of Craig when he does those bits. And I think that it's losing some of the personal touch. It's losing the hunger. And there was another comment here that I think was a really good point, which was, let me see if I can find this. The older phones had the less is more aspect versus now the cameras are huge camera bumps. They can feel heavy, etc. I think that's another good point. Like, as much as I do really like the cameras on the iPhone, the camera bump getting just bigger and bigger because they just are like, okay, whatever, we're just going to do it. That is something I don't tend to subscribe to, the Steve Jobs would be rolling in his grave hysteria. But like when you put an iPhone down and it is that like unstable and bouncy and, you know, all these like little details that they're not caring about. And you just know that old Apple would have had this obsessive, not remotely cost-effective or business-savvy attention to those details. And that, I think, is the difference that we're feeling among those other things.
That is definitely true, yeah. I think going back to the keynote thing, personally, I like seeing more of these people, like, or seeing more different people, especially the people that worked on the products, talking about them is really cool. But I feel like there's something, maybe it's Apple's like PR or there's something that they basically like sterilize. They make everything so sterile that they're like, I feel like these people, for me personally, you know, it's fun to see, like, it's always fun to see like Craig and, you know, he does his jokes, whatever. It's like fun to see the people that you know, and you know, you're going to see Tim Cook and say, good morning. Or I guess these days, you know, John Ternus is showing up more often than Tim Cook. But like you see these recurring people, even for the people that are not recurring, I just feel like they're not allowed to show any kind of a personality. Mm. First of all, I'll admit that it's you know, it's a different, if you're, you know, live and you have this live audience and you can play off of the audience a little bit, then it's a little bit better. But even if they didn't have the live audience and they still did this, I feel like these people are not allowed, these presenters are not allowed to have or show their personality in the videos. And everything is very clean, corporate. You know, here's the things we here at Apple are so excited to tell you about, blah, blah, blah. It's not like I'm excited about this because I'm passionate about it and I helped build this thing with my awesome team and we're so excited to show it to you. It's we here at Apple are so excited to show you these new features that are going to change the world. And it's like,
yes, that's exactly it. You're exactly right. Because there is a part of it where, you know, some of them are, you hear from someone for 5 minutes in one keynote and never see them again. You're not going to build that like parasocial relationship that people have with Craig Federighi. But a lot of it, I think, is exactly your point. Like Carrie Ann Drance, she is in almost every Apple keynote. She talks about the iPhone. But they have these presenters so sterilized and like posed that they don't even read as real people anymore. Like, it has gotten absolutely out of hand. No one, like, there's no personality in any of the scenarios that they show. It's always just perfect looking family doing task with the new product. Like, remember back in the day when they used to do demos where Steve Jobs would FaceTime Phil Schiller on the new MacBook out in the audience and he was just standing out there? They don't do that. They don't do any of these, like, more lighthearted, good-natured, fun type of things. And that's not a Tim Cook versus Steve Jobs thing, because they still did those things under Tim Cook. It's like this weird trend that, I mean, I guess it's working for Apple for now financially, but I personally can't imagine that you could do the rest of the 2020s operating this way without starting to feel the consequences, right? I guess that's the thing that we now have to discuss or come to realize is, has Apple outgrown its own fan base? Is Apple so big of a company that it does not make sense for them to make us happy because they're so big and so profitable that this status quo is just the no-brainer?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a good point. And I feel like, yeah, maybe, I mean, this is sort of the goal, right? The goal under capitalism, whatever, it's to grow as much as you can and, you know, capture as much market share. And like we were saying before, you know, if you can avoid putting in effort but still get, you know, you do all these calculations, like if we were saying, what's the minimum effort you can put in to get the maximum result? Mm-hmm. And maybe Apple is, you know, they're big enough at the point where they're like, well, we can, you know, we can start sacrificing the effort. And I think that they, you know, like we said, that they really have started to do that. So I agree. I feel like, so we're talking about these keynotes, right? This new style of keynote started during COVID, and it made sense to do it then because, you know, you couldn't do a live event. And at the time that it started, it was super fresh. It was new. It was a new approach. It was really cool with all the drone shots and the cool transitions and you know, seeing different places in Apple Park, and occasionally they would go to other places as well. And it was like really, really cool. And I think I remember saying, like, oh, or thinking, oh, Apple's not going to go back to the old way of doing it. This new way is so much better. But now we're like 4 years into this new way, and anytime there's an Apple event, I'm like, okay, there's going to be a generator thing. There's going to be a fly-in to Apple Park, to the middle of Apple Park. There's going to be some transitions. Some people are going to talk. It's getting kind of old. And I feel like, to your point about, you know, is Apple too big to innovate or to keep innovating like that? Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they would have or should have shifted, you know, switched some things up by now, but it's making the money, and it's, you know, don't, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But it is getting kind of stale.
And you know what also just occurred to me? There's something else that happened right before this falling off that Apple has been going through, and that is the departure of Johnny Ive. And what I think is interesting about that is when Johnny Ive left Apple, my thought was kind of like, hey, this is probably a good thing, because the late 2010s, Johnny was not cooking his best work. I mean, a lot of Apple products were like very well designed and they looked very good, but they had a lot of issues. I mean, we had the butterfly keyboard, we had overheating MacBooks, we had the iPhone XS had a bunch of reliability issues, you had bending iPads and iPhones. Like, there were all of these controversies, And so I feel like what has kind of happened here is Apple went through that kind of bumpy road, shall we say, with the last gen MacBook Pro, the older iPhones that people were annoyed about when they would, oh, they moved the headphone jack. Oh, they removed the home button. You know, people got all mad at these different sort of controversies that would come and go. And what that has left us with is just playing it safe. Nothing exciting, something new every, you know, you basically get one new thing a year and everything else is just spec bumps. Like, if you think about what Apple announced this year, we had a kind of redesigned iPad Pro. I would call that a revision more than a redesign. We had, well, Vision Pro. That was a big one, but also an underwhelming one where it feels like, again, they kind of half-assed it. And then you had the iPhones this year were good but iterative. The 16, better than the 16 Pro, to be honest, but only really because the 15 was the same as the 14, was the same as the 13, was the same as the 12. So, like, you get one good thing, and that's the Mac Mini. Everything else, spec bumps, spreadsheets, nothing to really sink your teeth into. And you go back to almost any year in Apple's recent history since Steve Jobs came back in 1997. Even the kind of mid-years, you would still find something that was a big deal. Literally, give me any year since 1997, and I will tell you a major product that was a big deal that came out in that year.
Okay, 2002.
2002, oh, come on. The Sunflower G4 iMac. What a legendary, like, talk about a risk, right? That was not something that made any financial sense, but they were like, hey, we're going to make the coolest iMac that the world has ever seen. Give me another year.
2008.
Unibody MacBook Pro.
Okay. How about 2000?
Ooh, clamshell iBook.
Okay. I'm trying to think of another. What about 2011?
Recent. Okay, 2011. You could maybe make the case for iPad 2. That was a pretty big one. iPhone 4S was a pretty big one as well.
Okay.
Yeah, 2011, honestly, that is one of the most, like, that was probably the biggest lull that Apple had in the 2010s. Because if you go 2012, I'll just even go sequentially since 2011, and I can give you one big product from every year. 2012, Retina MacBook Pro. 2013, mm-hmm. Honestly, 2012 has a lot. 2012 had iPhone 5, it had iPhone, you had iPad Mini, you had the slim side iMac. 2012 was a big year. 2013, trash can Mac Pro. Big, not necessarily good, but a big year nonetheless. 2014, you might be thinking, oh, 2014, not the biggest year. Boom, iPhone 6, 5K iMac. 2015, Apple Watch, 12-inch Retina MacBook. 2016, And I'm not even talking about iPhone here, because those weren't even as big a deal then. 2016. 2016, MacBook, you had Touch Pro. Bar MacBook Pro. Let's see, 2016 was another, that was a lull year. But again, you still got a redesigned MacBook Pro generation. 2017, iPhone 10. 2018, let's see, I guess honestly, the iPad Pro. 2019... You had the Mac Pro redesign. The iPhone 11 was still a pretty big one. Like, literally every single year you find these big products. Oh, someone else said 2011 was the introduction of Siri. That's another big thing for 2011. Like, you can go back to any single year and you will find something major. I don't think that you could do that for this year, because as cool as it is, I don't think that the M4 Mac Mini is that big a deal.
No, it. I don't think it is in the same way that a lot of those other things were. I think going back to like the Johnny Ive thing, I think it's interesting. Like when he was at Apple, you know, they would make those videos where he would come talk and he would be like, you know, the aluminium describes a singular form. And
yes!
Like he would do all his like...
The space dust!
the space dust for the piano black, or what is it called? The jet black iPhone 7 with the space dust and whatever, the trash can Mac Pro, whatever. There were some things that were out there. Obviously, you know, the iPhone 6, I think, was arguably, you know, you said it was ugly. I agree with you. It was, there was the whole bend gate kind of thing. It was a little too thin and long at whatever. There were questionable things. Butterfly keyboard, the trash can Mac Pro. There were a lot of questionable things. But I guess at least it was kind of interesting generally. I feel like now we've gone in the total opposite direction. You know, like you said about things being designed in a spreadsheet, I would tend to agree. It seems basically like since the introduction of Apple Silicon, every device gets one update to the Apple Silicon design. And I get that we're only, you know, 4 years into it or whatever, but like every device gets one redesign. Some of them came sooner rather than later, and then that's the design that you get, and they'll do some minor upgrades to it. I feel like maybe there can be something in the middle from these, you know, the kind of boring state that we have now. And you could argue that maybe Johnny Ive was a little too out there, and some of the things that he designed, you know, weren't the best. But could there be something in the middle that it's at least a little bit more interesting than it is right now?
Dude, this is such a good conversation. Every time I talk to you, I figure out what my next video is going to be. And yeah. I think that's it. 2024, the year Apple stopped trying. Now, I think it's been more than just this year, but I think this year we're really starting to see what happens when you treat effort like a resource that has to be conserved. Because that was not the case before. And I just feel like it's a shame more than anything else. I think that example of the iPhone 7 space dust is so perfect because it perfectly encapsulates exactly what Apple is missing right now. And that is that it's literally just a feeling. I don't even think the iPhone 7 was a good phone. I thought it was mid as hell. But
yeah,
the care, the attention to detail, the effort was there. And I just feel like the launches nowadays feel like they don't even really care anymore. It's not even that the phones are that much, you know, worse or anything. You know, like I said, the iPhone 7 was mid as hell. I think the iPhone 16 is a better update than the iPhone 7 was. But the thing is, the iPhone 7 was a mid phone that came out 2 years after a massive update, which was the iPhone 6, and it came out 1 year before another massive update, the iPhone 10. So I am perfectly fine with a mid phone every other year, or maybe 2 years in a row. But we've been having, this is now the fourth consecutive mid update. I said it in my iPhone 16 review, you could just as easily call this an iPhone 12 SSSS with the way that they've treated it. And I think we talked about this as well. If Apple had saved the dynamic island, the titanium enclosure with the mild design update, and the larger display, that's the big things from the 14, 15, and 16. If you put those in one phone, you could absolutely say, massive update. This is a generational leap with USB-C in there too. Like, dude, imagine if they had done that. There is a part of me that has wondered lately, would Apple make more money in the long run if they stopped releasing a new phone every year? What if they only released on a 2-year cycle and you could stagger it? So let's say even year, you get a pro phone. Odd year, you get a regular phone, right? What if they did that? Is that so crazy?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm sure that the people at Apple have, you know, done their math, and I guess it's better to do it every year. But I agree, like, there doesn't need to be, like, look at, I mean, Apple, right? The iPhone and the Apple Watch are yearly, and you know that those are coming in September. Other than that, you have a general idea. I guess iPads are usually in the spring, you know, earlier part of the year, and Macs are usually after the iPhones. But like for any given product, I feel like the iPhone and the Apple Watch are the two that are very, very like, you know, it's a cycle. It's like, you know, September comes around, it's going to be a new one. The Macs, sometimes Apple's, they've been updated sooner, sometimes later. I mean, look at the Mac Mini that like finally got a redesign after, you know, a bunch of years that it really should have. So if all of the other products work where it's sort of an ad hoc refresh cycle, it's not super, super regimented. I get that the Apple Watch and the iPhone are like big categories for Apple and they're very important, but like, I agree with you. Could they just not? And I guess the thing is that like, we're sitting here because we're tech people, and so we can look and say, you know, oh, Apple launched these phones and they were disappointing. The Apple Watch is disappointing. You know, we can say all of those things. But I guess for most people, they would just look at it and say, eh, I'm not interested in that one. So it wouldn't be, if they get some people, they get some people. If some people are not interested, they're just not interested. But it doesn't really harm Apple's reputation. For us, we're saying, ooh, Apple's, you know, they're kind of losing their hunger. They're kind of, you know, slipping a little bit. So maybe their reputation is, you know, going a little bit down in our eyes, or, you know, we're saying these things. But I guess for most people, they're not going to even think about it that much. And I guess Apple, maybe they're just okay with that.
That's true. And it's very possible. But I feel like, I think that is not long-term going to end up being the right approach. And I want to touch on two details. First is this comment, which I think is true. And the reason for this...
And the comment says, wait, the comment says, yeah, it says, ironically, I'd argue the Mac is in the best state it has been in ever right now. So that's the comment.
And I think that is true because the Mac is an inherently more invested group of buyers. And it's also on a slower cycle. Like, we don't expect a new generation MacBook Pro every year. Or every 3 years, even. It's a more engaged audience and a less expectant audience.
Yeah.
And so, what I'm trying to get at is, the Mac is in the best state it has ever been, because Apple had to work very, very hard on listening to its consumers, implementing what those consumers wanted, and delivering actual updates for the first time. And that is different from how they operated for a long time, because I think with devices like the iPads and the iPhone and the Apple Watch, they're marketing to such an uninformed mass market audience that they can get away with just change the colors, just do this, that, and the other thing, and it's fine. People will still buy it. But it's clear that they're not making these decisions based on enthusiasts, right? I think that is maybe the most clear difference that I can point to between today and let's say 15 years ago. 15 years ago, Apple was, I mean, it was tech nerds. It was run by tech nerds. It was for tech nerds. And it kind of, I guess it was like trickle down tech, right? You start with the tech nerds and then it spreads to the mass market. But critically, the devices and the way that they announced those devices was very definitely targeted to people who cared a lot about them. You go back and watch any old Steve Jobs keynote, he's saying nerdy stuff in those things. He's going, we've got, you know, he put up these whole graphs with specs and performance details. And he would talk about, He would talk about L2 cache in these keynotes. Even for stuff like the MacBook Air, which then gets marketed in these very broad strokes way. But I think that was a really effective communication style for Apple. It was, we're smart, you're smart, here's what is smart about this product. And then months and years later, it gets into the hands of everyone. That's what they did with the iPhone. The mass market didn't get on the iPhone bandwagon for a couple years. You know, watch TV shows from the late 2000s and you'll see what I mean. Most TV shows were still having random weird cell phones until like 2010. It wasn't until 2010, 11, 12 that you started to see smartphones and specifically iPhones in movies and TV, because everything's kind of on a delay when it comes to showing it in mass market and mass media.
Yeah, and I think the other thing you could look at is like WWDC, the supposed Worldwide Developers Conference. In the past, it used to be this like event that you could buy a ticket to. It was very expensive, and it really was this event that was like meant for developers, where they'd talk about all the new software things that are going to come out, and then they'd have all these hands-on sessions explaining, you know, how to use all this new stuff. And I feel like these days it's really more of, you know, here's the keynote, which is for the general audience, where we're going to talk about all this stuff in a very general way. And then I think they still have those workshops and things. I think it's online now. I don't know if it's how much of that part is in person anymore, but I do feel like it's also shifted, you know, in that way too. But I agree. And then I was just thinking about like the Vision Pro, and I wonder if part of the issue with the Vision Pro is that Apple tried to market it too broadly, because you're talking about like with the iPhone and with some of these things, the way that Apple used to do the marketing, they were more technical and they knew they had their audience. I wonder if that style and that audience, you know, maybe it's a different audience now, whatever, but like that style and that audience for something like the Vision Pro, which was a very, very clearly a first generation product that had has a long way to go. You know, if it would have been better, if maybe Apple, you know, when they marketed the Vision Pro, maybe they tried to go too broad with it and tried to appeal to too many people. And if you give it to the average person, they're going to try it on and say, oh, this thing is cool, but like, you know, it's not that great. And like, what am I going to do with it and whatever? And I wonder if that, you know, is sort of part of why the Vision Pro didn't do as well as it could have.
That's an interesting perspective. I think there's something to that, because it definitely has felt like a focus on making everything feel broad, and you know, anyone could watch this and want it, right? That's what they want to do. But the thing is, I think you're right. They ended up, especially with Vision Pro, they didn't really market it enough towards nerds, but that's who's going to buy it. And they tried to make, like, a lot of the examples that they showed was like a dad taking video of his kids, watching a movie, like very like hip, trendy people in nice houses watching a movie. And, you know, all of these things where it kind of makes you wonder, like, would that person, that character in real life actually buy this product? I don't know. The most realistic scene that they showed was when they were doing the Mac screen extension. They showed like a guy in a design workspace using it. I think they should have leaned into that. And that's what they used to do with their products in the olden days. I think the MacBook Air keynote is a great example of this, because the MacBook Air is the most mass market computer that Apple ever made. But the original MacBook Air, it's a very nerdy keynote. They talk about, we were able to shrink the package on the CPU by 30% with a new substrate that allowed us to build this smaller logic board to make the computer smaller. Nerdy keynote. But how is it advertised? The iconic, the timeless manila envelope ad. So that's this thing that Apple used to be able to do all the way up through like 2018, 19, I would say. You would announce it to the nerds, market to the masses. And it kind of did both. I mean, I guess you could argue if Apple is following the money that whatever their strategy is now, it works better than that used to. But I don't know, man. I feel like I'm reading the comments here. I'm listening to what you're saying. And I feel like I think people are, for the longest time, thought that this was just me. I thought, you know, I'm doing this as my job. Job always makes things feel less exciting. You know, if you're doing it as work, it's not going to be as exciting as when we were in high school and we'd run home and pull up the Apple keynote on the Apple TV and watch all the new stuff that came out that we couldn't possibly afford. Like, yeah, it is different to do this as a job, but to see all of these, you know, 142 people, and I'm seeing a lot of comments that are agreeing with us and being like, oh, I've never seen other people actually just put this into words before, but this is what I've been feeling.
Yeah, it definitely is a trend. I'm trying to think because I want to say that this kind of started around COVID, and I'm trying to think if it was earlier than that. But obviously, I mean, COVID affected a lot of things. But I really do think that it affected. I think part of it was, you know, for it was like the work from home, for example, that like for a long time, companies, especially tech companies, were very insistent. Like I interned for Google in the summer of 2019. So that was like, you know, not that long before COVID. And back then it was you were expected to be in the office 5 days a week. And if you weren't going to be there, it was an exception to the rule, and you would have to, you know, tell your team, like, you know, you have a reason. Oh, I got to pick up my kid from school, or oh, my, you know, I'm sick, whatever. But like, it was not a big deal, but it was like a thing that like, oh, you're not going to be in work today. Like that's, you know, you got to tell people, and it's an exception, whatever. And then after COVID, now it's like, oh, you know, people can work from home. You know, Google at least is 3 days a week in the office, but it's still kind of flexible. And, you know, a lot of companies are fully remote, and some companies have tried to bring people back, and the people don't really like it. So I feel like that's part of it. Like, I guess COVID kind of forced, and I don't want to talk about COVID right now, but I'll just say that COVID like forced some change. And I think it made people and companies reevaluate some of the things that they thought. Some of it, like remote work, is, I think, a good thing that there's more flexibility now. I definitely think that's a good thing. But maybe there were some things, maybe all of this tech stuff had something to do with that like all these companies were working. And then when COVID hit, there was a period where like not a lot of stuff was happening in the world. And then as things started to come back, and maybe the pace was a little bit slower for a while, the companies saw that and they're like, you know, we haven't done as much lately, and there's a good reason for that, but we haven't done as much lately, and it seems like that's okay. Maybe we continue with this trend, and I don't know if that's actually the cause, but it does seem like the timing would sort of line up potentially.
I think you're right. Something happened during COVID, and it just kind of reconfigured the way that a lot of companies are approaching stuff. Maybe it was consumer spending. Maybe it was, you know, abandoning the certain, it almost kind of felt like a rules of decorum or something that companies used to abide by, like these unspoken rules of like, no, you have to deliver a certain amount of things for it to be accepted by the public, where maybe some during COVID, they kind of realized, oh, wait a minute, we can actually kind of just like force people to put up with stuff, and they kind of don't really have a choice. Because like, what else are you going to do? If you need a new iPhone, you need a new iPhone. They're going to get the sale no matter what. Doesn't matter if they spend, you know, an extra $1 billion on R&D to make it better, you're going to buy it anyway. If you need one, you're going to buy it. And if you want one because you're a nerd, you're still going to buy it. So why try harder than you have to? Maybe that's what it is. The companies don't want to try harder than they have to, and they're working on basically figuring out where is the line of, you know, the maximum reward for the minimum amount of effort, and just roll with that.
Yeah, it definitely seems like that's how things have been going in a lot of ways, and hopefully things will pick up again. I don't know what the impetus would be. I don't know what would like cause that to happen, but like, you know, hopefully things would, you know, start to pick up again. Maybe if you know, if we're talking about this and people are expressing, you know, we all kind of agree, or a lot of us agree about this, maybe if there's enough of a you know, this sentiment is expressed enough that maybe companies will change their minds. I don't know, but yeah, it's getting a little bit stale, a little bit boring overall. Is that really how we're going to end 2024? It's kind of sad.
Well, yeah, I mean, honestly, I feel like I don't really know how else to end it, because I've just felt this pretty consistent tone from people. I felt it personally. I felt it from my friends. It's not so much a pessimistic tone so much as it is, I want Apple to do better because I know that they can. I know that they have the talent and the capability to blow our minds, and they've been doing it for 40, 50 years. So it's in there. And I think it will eventually come out. We'll see how long it takes. If it's, you know, a next year thing or a next decade thing, I don't know. But what I do know is that, unfortunately, I just remembered, I'm going to be traveling next week. So unfortunately, we're going to be off next week as well.
Okay. I think, where are we?
Here
we
on, go. January next 5th. Week,
okay. I will also be away on the 5th.
Oh, okay. So, hey, I didn't ruin it. What about the 12th?
Yes, we both did. The 12th, I will be here.
Okay. It's settled then. We'll see you guys on January 12th.
Yes.
Heck good. Yeah.
Not 6 weeks from now.
Not 6 weeks from now. But what's actually going to be 6 seconds from now is me thanking you very much for watching, because, of course, I have been your host, Luke Miani.
Okay, now you can thank them.
Thank you guys so much for watching. I've been your host, Luke Miani.
And I've been your host, Noah Rubin. We will see you next year, and have a great night.